The headlines: Russia's president says the West is exploiting Ukraine and using its people as cannon fodder in the conflict against Russia. Iran urges Western regimes to stop hosting and backing terrorists ahead of lecturing it, instead of lecturing it on how to handle riots. And German lawmakers call for a security review in the wake of an alleged far-right plot to violently overthrow the government. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Russia's President Vladimir Putin has criticized Western states' policies, warning that they are increasing the risk of global conflict.
The potential for conflict in the world is growing, and this is a direct consequence of the attempts by Western elites to preserve their political, financial, military, and ideological dominance by any means. They deliberately multiply chaos and aggravate the international situation.
Putin also accused the West of exploiting Ukraine and using its people as, quote, cannon fodder against Russia. He made the remarks during a video message to a summit of defense ministers from the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and a group of ex-Soviet countries. Russia has repeatedly denounced the West's military support for Ukraine since the war began there in February. Moscow says Western countries are only adding fuel to the flames of war. It says that they do not seek to find a solution to end the conflict. As battle rages on around the northern Donbass town of Bakhmut, both sides are launching strikes on each other's cities, while Russia targets energy infrastructure. Our correspondent reports that Ukrainians are targeting civilians in Donetsk.
Kubashevsky district, Donetsk. A child is wounded by Ukrainian shelling. An ambulance took her to the hospital. But a second didn't arrive fast enough, so a local volunteer, Andrei, puts the child's mother in the back of his van and drives her there himself. Ukraine has a history of shelling civilians in Donetsk since 2014. Over recent days, they've increased the slaughter. More than a dozen have been killed in the last 4 days. Nowhere in the city is safe. 2 supermarkets were hit in the space of 2 days.
The city has been hit hard today, multiple strikes around the center. The death toll is already up to 5. We're racing around the city to check out the damage.
We pass a market. It caught on fire due to a strike. Flowers are placed outside for a woman killed at the same spot a few weeks ago. The central cathedral of Donetsk. Many will be outraged, but at least it didn't kill. A few minutes later, we arrive at the site of another strike. There's a body on the ground, and 2 more inside.
Now, while many of the attacks by Ukraine and Donetsk are aimed at civil infrastructure or administration buildings, some are simple terror attacks against civilians. This building here is a youth center. The woman who was killed is still lying just down there, covered in a blanket.
The woman was later identified as Maria Pirogova, a young deputy of the DPR authorities. Another killed was Vadim Lobozov, a singer in a music band.
Now, I've tried to talk to a couple of people at the scene here, but they didn't want to. They're simply too traumatized to speak. One man breaking down in tears by the side of the road. And frankly, my fixer, my translator, is very keen for us to get out of here, because at any moment, these strikes can happen again. Right across the city, they've been happening today. And no doubt there'll be more anytime soon.
Andre, the volunteer who took the mother to the hospital in Kubayevsky.
They shell the center of Donetsk on purpose, to scare people, to create an unstable zone in the city, so that people will complain, to provoke. To me, they're not warriors who fight with other warriors. They fight civilians. So I think they do not deserve to be called military. They should be classified as war criminals by a military court.
While Russia launches major attacks on energy infrastructure, in a shockingly underreported story, Ukraine is launching attacks on civilians, whom it claims to be its own citizens. Few people are on the streets today, as more strikes are expected. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
A massive blaze breaks out overnight in a shopping center near the Russian capital, Moscow. Officials say one person has died as a result. They say the fire, the size of a football pitch, has been put out after several hours. Russian media citing sources in the emergency services said arson was to blame for the blaze, but they later said safety violations likely caused the blaze in the northern suburb of Moscow. Iran says fighting terrorism, violence, and hate speech are clear international responsibilities amid the Western criticism of its response to the riots in the country. The Iranian foreign minister singled out Germany's, quote, hypocritical and duplicitous stance on the unrest in Iran. Hossein Amir Abdollahian says Berlin considers such scourges as red lines, but itself, it cites the same sinister phenomena in Iran and denounces Tehran's legitimate campaign against them. Germany has condemned Iran and summoned the Iranian ambassador. The UK and Canada have also slapped fresh sanctions on Iran, while the EU is also reportedly set to impose more bans on the country. Meanwhile, Iran has also slammed a Western country's interventionist remarks on the recent riots in the country, accusing them of harboring terrorists. In a string of tweets, the foreign ministry underlined that public security remains a red line for the Islamic Republic, stressing that armed assault and vandalism are not tolerable. It said the country has shown utmost restraint in countering rioters and employed proportionate and standard anti-riot methods. The ministry slammed the West for hypocritically lecturing the Islamic Republic. It said instead of spreading lies through politicized statements, the West must stop hosting and backing and encouraging terrorists. Riots began following the death of a young woman in a hospital days after she collapsed at a police station. Since then, some Western countries have been waging psychological warfare and fueling unrest in Iran. Illegal weapons entering Iran have surged during the past few months. Foreign sponsors of the recent riots have been planning to arm rioters to destabilize the country while stoking insecurity, but Iranian security forces have successfully foiled several of these arms smuggling operations, sending a strong message to the enemies of Iran that peace and stability are the country's red lines.
Ever since the riots began in September, anti-Iran media has been depicting the situation as a violent crackdown on so-called peaceful protesters. For the past 2 months, they have been running a propaganda campaign to further pressure Iran under the pretext of violating human rights. But are these peaceful protesters? Iran's intelligence ministry has recently reported the confiscation of a huge cache of weapons and equipment used by terrorists. In fact, Iranian security forces have thwarted several arms smuggling operations and dismantled a number of operational cells affiliated with the terrorist organizations such as MKO. This comes as the illegal influx of weapons into the country is on the rise recently. The confiscated weapons were supposed to be transferred to Iran to be used in the recent riots. Last month, in an interview with the Persian service of the British state-funded broadcaster BBC, former White House National Security Advisor John Bolton said the, quote, Iranian opposition is now being armed with weapons. Bolton added that these arms are being smuggled into the country from the Iraq's Kurdistan region, praising the use of force against Iran's security forces. The recent foreign-backed riots in Iran have claimed hundreds of lives belonging to both security forces and ordinary people. In addition, by conducting acts of vandalism, violence, and insecurity, rioters have paved the way for separatist and terrorist groups to infiltrate the country and carry out brutal attacks against innocent people.
Smuggling huge amounts of weapons into Iran to be used in the recent foreign-backed unrest is merely aimed at undermining the country's security. But Iranian officials have time and again stated that Iran's security is a red line that no one is allowed to cross. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
The United States has imposed sanctions on a prominent Turkish businessman for allegedly violating Washington's restrictive measures on Iran's oil sales. The Treasury Department has blacklisted Sitki Ayan, an associate of the Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. A number of companies run by Ayan and his family are also on the blacklist. According to the Treasury, Ayan has facilitated the sale and shipment of Iranian oil for the country's Revolution Guards Corps. The U.S. also says Ayan has used his business network to obscure the origins of Iranian oil and the destination of the payments. Iran's oil and petrochemical industries are under U.S. sanctions. Lebanese security forces say there has been a significant increase in the number of Lebanese recruited by the Israeli spy agency Mossad. They cite the Arab country's deepening economic crisis as the main reason behind the rise. Maram Saleh reports.
Lebanon has arrested 185 people suspected of working for the Israeli spy agency since October 2019, when the Arab country's ongoing economic crisis became apparent.
This is Israel's intelligence agency's invasion of the Lebanese virtual sovereignty. The Israelis took advantage of the economic crisis and the fact that the Lebanese are looking for job opportunities with U.S. dollars coming from abroad. And so they created fake companies through which they acquired thousands of resumes from Lebanese people. They were able to contact any one of those job hunters in the guise of foreign companies, while in reality they were Israeli recruiters.
Lebanese security sources have told AFP that the number has increased dramatically, from only 4 or 5 arrests per year.
One of the most notable examples of this was the busting of over 35 Lebanese and Palestinians that were gathering intelligence on Hezbollah and of the Palestinian factions in Lebanon for Israel. Israel, again, used a lot of fake companies and front groups to trap those kind of in a desperate economic situation into accepting these fake front opportunities.
Out of the 185 people arrested since 2019, 165 have been prosecuted and 25 convicted and sentenced. The economic collapse in Lebanon has taken its toll on the country in several ways, but it seems it's not the only reason for treason. Several collaborators admitted that they continued their communications with the Mossad out of sheer opposition to the resistance.
When we read the interrogation reports of those who were arrested, we understand that it was more than only giving intelligence. One of the suspects admits that he was asked to write articles aimed at sowing sedition amongst the Lebanese and inciting people against Hezbollah and resistance. They asked him, for example, to write articles which would give an impression that Hezbollah is linked to the Beirut port explosion in order to provoke hatred against the resistance movement.
Political analysts believe recruiting spies by the Israeli regime will continue since a military option is not on the table.
These kinds of more subtle forms of gaining influence in Lebanon and especially putting people into a very desperate economic state and taking advantage of that seems to both basically cut the losses on the military front that Israel and the U.S. Even know that it has unmatched against the resistance forces in the region.
Although Lebanon remains technically in a state of war with Israel, there has been no direct confrontation between the two sides since 2006. Nevertheless, Israel's espionage activities have never stopped. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
German lawmakers are asking for a review of security arrangements at the lower house of parliament known as the Bundestag following an alleged coup attempt on Wednesday. Around 24 people belonging to a far-right group are now in detention with connections with the alleged coup. Among them is a former far-right MP. Now, German lawmakers say security arrangements should be reviewed to keep away what they call enemies of the Constitution. The Bundestag vice president says the chamber will carefully examine which security measures it needs to adapt. German government has said that the far-right group was preparing a violent overthrow of the state. It says some members also plan to storm the German parliament and seize lawmakers. There are now more food banks in the UK than there are McDonald's. Soaring inflation and energy price hikes are forcing more Britons to rely on food aid and avoid starvation. Also, with a cold season already here, charities are warning that things are going to take a turn for the worse for millions of Britons, Said Purazar reports.
Doors at food banks across the UK are seeing more people come through now than ever before, as food and energy costs rise. Beans, noodles, and fruit. Food packaged up for people in crisis, not in the developing world, but in northwest London.
This is one of the thousands of centres across the UK. All this food is sorted, packaged, and distributed by the volunteers here to people who desperately need them. Without them, they go hungry.
Sarah, who asked her face not to be shown, told us she'd go days without food so her three children could eat.
I go days without eating as long as they get fed. I can go days without it. I can do it, but it's them I'm concerned. It's worrying for me for them to go without food. But I can go without food for a couple of days or so, just eat, drink milk, hot chocolate, yogurts and stuff, so they can have a full meal. Like, everything I have, it's all for them. So, you know, it is difficult.
This independent charity provides aid to 800 food bank users. And with the UK's economic downturn making the poor even poorer, they're warning more people will be knocking on their doors.
According to the government's new budget, benefits will be increasing in line with inflation, but that's not until April. So that means our guests will continue to struggle throughout the winter for the next few months, throughout the rain and snow and cold weather.
These bags only offer days of help, but that too could be under threat. Food banks are now at breaking point due to a tsunami of need driven by the cost of living crisis.
Regular donors are unable to donate what they used to. Funders have less money to give to support because of all of that was spent during the pandemic. So while our demand is still the same, the support that we need to provide it is running out.
Charities estimate more than 2 million people in Britain now depend on food aid. For now, help is around, with those in need hoping the country's economic outlook improves. The question is how long that will take. Saeed Purizza, London.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Former US President Donald Trump has repeated his allegations about fraud in the 2020 presidential election and called for suspension of America's Constitution. The Biden White House has strongly criticized Donald Trump for calling for the termination of the Constitution. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. CNN has covered this story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump has called for the termination of the U.S. Constitution's rules regarding elections to overturn the results of the disputed 2020 presidential election, following the emergence of evidence that social media sided with the Washington establishment to suppress negative reports about Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, ahead of the election. Donald Trump said on Saturday, 3rd of December, the founding fathers of the United States did not want fraudulent elections in the country. Elon Musk released what he called the Twitter files on Friday, 2nd of December, delving into the company's decision to block the Hunter Biden laptop story. The post focused on the controversy surrounding Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, and Twitter's reaction limiting the spread of posts about it. It was billed as a bombshell that exposed how Twitter engaged in free speech suppression in the critical run-up to the 2020 presidential election. Trump said in a Truth Social post, "A massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for termination of all rules, regulations and articles, even those found in the Constitution. Our great founders did not want and would not condone false and fraudulent elections." Donald Trump said the revelations show massive and widespread fraud and deception from big tech, the Democratic National Committee, and the Democratic Party, asking if the 2020 presidential election results should be thrown out and he should be declared the winner, or if a new election should be held. Trump believes that the election was rigged by the U.S. establishment in favor of Joe Biden. He has said that the 2020 presidential election was the greatest election hoax in history. He previously accused Twitter and Facebook of helping Joe Biden to win the election. Pulitzer Prize-winning American investigative journalist Glenn Greenwald has revealed that an axis of the CIA, big technology firms, and the Democratic National Committee, allied wing of the corporate media, spread an absolute lie in the weeks before the 2020 presidential election to help Joe Biden win the vote. British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. The Biden White House rebuked Donald Trump after the former president said the U.S. Constitution should be terminated over his claim that the 2020 election was stolen. Andrew Bates, a White House spokesperson, said, "Attacking the Constitution and all it stands for is anathema to the soul of our nation and should be universally condemned." Andrew Bates called the Constitution a sacrosanct document, saying you cannot only love America when you win. Donald Trump lost to Joe Biden in 2020 by more than 7 million votes and by 306 to 232 in the Electoral College count, a result he called a landslide when it was in his favor in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump continues to say that Joe Biden won key states through electoral fraud, a claim that fueled the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol on 6th of January 2021. 9 deaths have been linked to the riot in the Capitol building, including law enforcement suicides. More than 950 people have been charged. Recently, 2 members of the far-right Oath Keepers militia were convicted of seditious conspiracy. Other members of far-right, pro-Trump groups face similar charges. Donald Trump was banned from Facebook and Twitter after the Capitol attack. He has not yet returned to the latter, despite his new owner, Elon Musk, saying he's free to do so. Donald Trump is the only declared candidate for a Republican nomination in 2024, but he has faced increasing criticism from within the Republican ranks. And Republicans supporting media since midterm elections in which many of his endorsed candidates were defeated, including election deniers in battleground states. Republicans took the House of Representatives, but only by a narrow margin, and failed to retake the U.S. Senate. On Saturday, 3rd of December, Donald Trump also criticized the Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and all of the weak Republicans who couldn't get the presidential election of 2020 approved and out of the way fast enough. Even after the Capitol riot, 147 Republicans objected to results in key states. Senior Republicans have also criticized Donald Trump over his decision to have dinner at his home in Florida with Nick Fuentes, a known white supremacist and anti-Semite. The website Politico has also covered the same story. Representative Liz Cheney, Republican of Wyoming, called former President Donald Trump an enemy of the Constitution on Sunday, 4th of December, after Trump suggested considering terminating the Constitution on Saturday, 3rd of December, the most overt condemnation in the GOP of Donald Trump's words. Liz Cheney tweeted, "No honest person can now deny that Trump is an enemy of the Constitution." Other Republicans joined Cheney in being critical of the idea of the Constitution being set aside, but they declined to say whether they'd vote for Donald Trump again after the statement. Representative Mike Turner, a Republican from Ohio, said, "It is certainly not consistent with the oath that we all take. I vehemently disagree with the statement from Donald Trump that Donald Trump has made." But Turner, speaking to host Margaret Brennan on CBS's Face the Nation program, declined to say Donald Trump's remarks were disqualifying when it came to his presidential candidacy. Turner said, "There is a political process that has to go forward." On Saturday, 3rd of December, Brian Schatz, a Democratic U.S. senator from Hawaii, pointed to such hard political reality, saying, "Trump just called for the suspension of the Constitution, and this is the final straw for zero Republicans, especially the ones who call themselves constitutional conservatives." One such conservative is Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader battling to become House Speaker. Not long before Donald Trump said the Constitution should be terminated, Kevin McCarthy said that when his party took control in January, it would demonstrate its constitutional bona fides by reading every single word of the hallowed document on the floor of the House. On Sunday, 4th of December, Hakeem Jeffries, the newly elected Democratic leader in the House, told ABC's This Week program Trump had made a strange statement, but the Republicans are going to have to work out their issues with the former president and decide whether they're going to break from him and return to some semblance of reasonableness or continue to lean in to extremism, not just of Donald Trump, but of Trumpism. On the same show, Dave Joyce of Ohio, chair of the Moderate Republican Governance Group, refused five opportunities to say he would not vote for Donald Trump if he was the nominee in 2024. John Bolton, George W. Bush's United Nations ambassador who became Donald Trump's third national security advisor, said, "No American conservative can agree with Donald Trump's call to suspend the Constitution because the results of the 2020 election. And all real conservatives must oppose his 2024 campaign for president."
From our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Ja'far Muhammad ibn Ali al-Barakat.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Ja'far, Muhammad the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the 9th divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet, the Messenger of Allah. He was also the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, with his talents, his genius, and his great endless scientific ability, has proven the luminous reality adopted by the Shia that an Imam must be the most aware and virtuous one of the people of his time. And it has also proven that the one who has more knowledge than anyone else must be the Imam, regardless of whether he is young or old. Allah the Almighty has provided the infallible Imams of the Ahlul Bayt, peace and blessings upon them all, with knowledge, wisdom, and sound judgment, similar to how Allah provided the prophets of the past with these same concepts and qualities. Truly, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam has shown this reality to all of the world. These are his dialogues.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's a blessing to have you with us on the program. You are listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Of course, the life of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam is a beautiful life, even though he had to face many of the trials and tribulations that were imposed upon him by the Abbasid governmental establishment. Now, of course, the Abbasids knew that these divinely appointed Imams, whether it was Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam or Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha alayhi salam or Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam in this case, the Abbasid caliphs knew that these were the rightful leaders, of course, because they witnessed firsthand the piety and the courage and the knowledge and the wisdom and really the all-encompassing wisdom, especially upon the Qur'an and the Ahlul Bayt that these divinely appointed Imams had. And so because the Abbasids knew this, then of course they were very, very heavy-handed in their tactics and in their manners and behaviors and even in their tortures against these divinely appointed Imams. Now this kind of harsh and very rough type of behavior on behalf of the leaders, on behalf of the caliph, on behalf of the governors, on behalf of the court judges, of course then begins to seep into society itself. And then the people start to become like this. As Imam Ali alayhi salam very beautifully and eloquently says, that the people are upon the religion of their rulers. If the ruler is corrupt, the people will eventually become corrupt. But if the ruler is good, then there is a much, much higher likelihood that the people will also be good.
So here, one of the strategies that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam did in order to help the society reform and repair itself, despite the damage that had been done over the centuries and was being done in his present day, was to talk about moral and ethical behaviors, the rights that one has upon others and what rights others have upon them, and the different ways of behaving with people in society and in friendship and in their families and etc. So in one such conversation and dialogue, we find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam is asked about what true companionship is. And truly the reply and the response of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam is really is very beautiful and is so very true. I mean, of course, we accept that their responses are true and they're the perfect truth. But sometimes when you read them or you listen to them and you really reflect and ponder on them, the more you think about them, you say, no, wow, this really, really is truth. You know, you acquire a different level of certainty upon these statements that these divinely appointed and divinely guided leaders were saying. So here Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam replies, he says that true companionship is to look over the expenses, of course, of others. Now, there's various ways in which we can kind of explain this. First off, we know true companionship, true friendship. But this looking over the expenses, one is to look over the expenses of your companion, of your good friend, you know, on a long term. Even though many people really can't do that, right? So that means that you are, in the long run, supporting and sponsoring a very good friend, you know, their life or their house expenditures or things like that. You have to be very well off to be able to do that. So it seems kind of ba'id, or it seems kind of improbable that the Imam would tell us that true companionship is to look over these long-term expenses for an individual. But it seems like he can be talking about short-term expenses, right? So, for example, your friend needs kind of a quick loan, or your friend needs, a little bit of money he needs to borrow, or your friend needs something. So you kind of look over that short-term, you know, expense that you are able to handle without putting yourself into trouble, right? But the other one, though, that kind of struck to my humble mind was that, for example, you go out, you know, for a cup of coffee, or you go out for a cup of tea, or you go out for a meal or a lunch or a dinner, you know, or you go to get a snack with a friend, a true companion. And here, you know, this idea of it's on me, you know, let me pay for it. Let me pay the bill, you know, let me charge it to my account. This here, it seemed to me to be a natural manifestation of the statement of the divinely appointed Imam, where with a true friend and a true companion, this is what you do. You want to pay for them. And of course, as I had said, the more you think about this, that true companionship is to look over the expenses of your companion and your friend, it's a very beautiful statement, and it's a very virtuous statement, a very righteous statement that we very practically see and feel, even in our present time, despite the passing of thousands of years. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam.
And now we invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Ayyub Rashid.
Respected brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Today within our communities, and especially in Indo-Pakistan, this movement is coming back. And this movement of ghulat is causing a lot of trouble. You are doing tabligh to inform people about the purity of the madhab of Ahlul Bayt, and there are other people who are crushing whatever you are doing. Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam stood against this movement. And of course, Imam alayhi salam also stood against those people who wanted to give a bad image of Islam by bringing ideologies which are not from Islam. So in terms of aqaid, Imam alayhi salam took care of that. And in his debates, as you can see, he became victorious, and many people who are waqifiyah, they returned to the mainstream of Shia Ithna Ashariya by following Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Fires and droughts in the western states of the United States are getting worse, and they are combining with industrial sources to threaten air quality and people's health. In this regard, we have provided an exclusive article written by the staff of the scientific publication Nature. Stay tuned for more. In September 2020, the skies in Oregon turned crimson as dozens of wildfires scorched forest in Cascade Mountains. In just 3 days, the blazes engulfed nearly 4,000 square kilometers, more than had burnt in Oregon during the previous 36 years combined. For 2 weeks, the acrid air held residents hostage in their homes. The Oregon Health Authority documented a 38% increase in respiratory-related visits to hospital emergency departments during September 2020 compared with the previous month. It was the worst two-week period they had ever experienced for air pollution anywhere, including India, China, and Bangladesh, says Perry Histad at Oregon State University in Corvallis, who studies health impacts of the worst air pollution worldwide. One stark sign of the dangers could be seen in the Air Quality Index, AQI, a measure of particulate matter pollution, PM, ozone, carbon monoxide, sulfur dioxide, and nitrogen dioxide. The U.S. AQI scale runs from 0 to 500, and values more than 300 are considered hazardous to everybody. For 2 weeks in mid-September, during the most intense burning across Washington State, Oregon, and California, the AQI was at 300 and above. The air monitors closest to the fires were shut off or knocked out. On the worst day, southeast of Salem, Oregon, the AQI surged past the scale's limit. Extrapolations by the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality estimate that it would have reached 642. there are AQI values that were unheard of in the region until the past 5 years, says Dan Jeff, an atmospheric chemist at the University of Washington in Seattle. Fine particulate pollution reached levels between 4 and 11 times the national ambient air quality standards limit set by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, and it didn't stay in the West. The pollution traveled all the way to New England on the U.S. East Coast. Air quality in the western United States has grown markedly worse in the past decade, owing largely to wildfires that are getting bigger and more frequent with the warming climate. In 2020, more than 4 million hectares burnt in the United States, the second highest amount since national records began in 1983. During the summer 2020, western wildfires accounted for nearly one quarter of the PM from particles less than 2.5 micrometers in diameter in the continuous United States. The problem is getting worse across the world. Globally, the number of extreme wildfires is expected to increase by 14% by 2030 and by up to 30% by the end of 2050. According to a February report by the United Nations Environment Program, our exposure to ambient fine particulate matter, which is rising globally, is estimated to kill up to 10 million people a year. The trends in the western United States stand out because they mark a sharp change in air pollution levels. The country has some of the strongest environmental regulations in the world and has made significant progress cleaning its skies since the 1970s. Regulations such as the Clean Air Act drastically cut levels of air pollution, including lead, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, ozone, and fine particles from vehicles, power plants, factories, and other sources. But the air quality success story has been swamped in the past decade by staggering environmental shifts due to warming climates. Beyond the spurring forest fires, climate change has also made the region more susceptible to droughts that dry out soils and expose lake beds, leading to vast plumes of airborne dust. Adding to the problem are emissions from agriculture, transportation, and fossil fuel development in California and southwestern states, which lead to high levels of ground-level ozone and other types of pollution. Some 40% of Americans, more than 137 million people, mostly in the West, are living in places that have unhealthy levels of particle pollution or ozone, according to the American Lung Association's State of Air 2022 report. The changes are putting tens of millions of people at risk, not only in western states but across the United States. The Clean Air Act was not designed for today's sources of pollution, says Marshall Burke, an earth system scientist at Stanford University in California. Amid all these changes, researchers are struggling to find ways to tackle the West's harmful air. The dry conditions are driving more air pollution into the United States. Higher temperatures and reduced precipitation are causing lakes such as Utah's Great Salt Lake and California's Salton Sea to evaporate, exposing sediments to wind erosion. Between the 1990s and 2000s, the number of large dust storms increased by 240% in the United States. And the climate trends have fueled explosive fire behavior. Wildfires are the front line of climate change impact on air quality, says Paul Billings, National Senior Vice President for Public Policy at the American Lung Association in Washington, D.C., adding, "We are seeing more hazardous, very unhealthy air days than we have seen in 20-plus years of doing the State of the Air report," he says. Researchers say laws intended to combat air pollution don't address increasingly important sources, such as wildfires and dust. In fact, the EPA created an exemption for the increased air pollution that occurs during wildfires, dust storms, and similar events considered to be natural. The agency's exceptional events rule, adopted in 2007, excludes days when such events happen from consideration by regulators. Since late rule came into force, Arizona's Maricopa County, home to the city of Phoenix, has used the exceptional events rule to significantly reduce the number of days the county failed to keep below pollution limits, 4 PM10. Particles below 10 micrometers in diameter. During 2011, for example, Maricopa County applied 20 exceptions for exceeding PM10 levels, 8 of which were in July alone. By pruning outliers deemed natural exceptions, the regulatory data set is skewed, says Katie Clifford, author of a paper this year that called the practice into question. The problem is how we are using the Clean Air Act, she says. It is built to respond to air quality issues caused by rule violations. So removing data reduces regulatory oversight, adds Clifford, a human geographer at the University of Colorado Boulder.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a heralder of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading
your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith. And this hadith is about suspicion and spying on other people. This hadith has been reported from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. The Holy Prophet Muhammad has been reported to have said, "Beware of suspicion, for suspicion is the greatest lie. And do not probe one another for information, nor spy on one another." In the Holy Quran, we read, "Avoid much suspicion. Indeed, some suspicions are sins. And do not spy on or backbite one another. Will any of you love to eat the flesh of his dead brother? You would hate it. And be wary of Allah. Indeed, Allah is all clement, all merciful." Also, it has been reported from the Holy Prophet Muhammad that he said, the Prophet said, "I have not been ordered to pry open the hearts of people, nor to cleave their bellies for information or flaws." It's been reported that one time Umar ibn al-Khattab was making his way through Medina at night, when he heard a man singing in his home. He jumped over the fence and said, "O enemy of Allah, did you think that Allah would conceal you while you disobey him?" The man retorted, "What about you, O commander of the faithful? Do not hasten to punish me, for if I disobeyed Allah once, you did so three times. He has said, 'Do not spy,' and you did spy on me." He also said, "Enter the homes from their doors, but you jumped over my fence and without my permission." And Allah the Exalted says, "Do not enter homes that are not yours until you are invited and until you greet their owners." Umar said, "Is there any good in you if I decide to pardon you?" The man said, "Yes." Then Umar pardoned him and departed. Right, so spying on people and probing into their flaws, this is one of the, this is a very grave sin, and one should avoid it. Nothing good comes out of this. It's better to, leave people to themselves. Of course, this does not go against the order of enjoining the right and prohibiting the evil. These orders do not contradict one another. If we come to know about the evil that a person is committing or the good that he has forsaken, then we should, do Amar bil Ma'ruf and Nahi al Munkar. Otherwise, we're not ordered to go around and probe into people's lives and find out whether they're doing good and evil, and then, then exhort them to do so. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at suspicion and spying in the words of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about.